In the fall each year we all congregate, the band all gathered at the church's tailgate. The scriptures reading from the book of Munson, our favorite verse, my God, a freshman. Drunk and obnoxious, what Georgia fame, ain't nothing finer in the land. Now the 3,000 of our best friends, it's Saturday in that thing.
Welcome to the Saturday in Athens podcast. I'm Herschel Gurley, here as always with my co-host, Boss Dog. Boss, bark at the people.
Hello, everyone. We're back to bark about the 2020 season. Going to put a nice little bow on everything and just kind of, you know, talk about the upcoming offseason. Tons to talk about with everybody coming back, people leaving for the portal. So just going to dive right in.
As Bill Belichick would say, we're on to 2021. 2020 is behind us. Hopefully in more ways than one. I guess first, let's kind of just start off with the national championship game last night. Obviously, Alabama, resounding victory over Ohio State. I guess just kick us off with what your thoughts were on that and if the result was your expectation or if you were a little surprised with the outcome.
I think it was exactly what I expected. Well, it was exactly what I expected. I expected Alabama to win. I expected them to win handedly. What surprised me was Ohio State playing archaic football for the time that we are in. I mean, you and I have talked about it throughout the year, just that the style of football has changed on a dime. And, you know, really it's midway through last year, you know, LSU, potent offense, the style of offense changed and became an offensive, you know, offensive style game. And Ohio State tried to change the script last night, tried to be a ground and pound, two tight end set. It really reminded me of Georgia from 3 years ago. The style of game they tried to play, which doesn't fit their skill players at all. And really their defensive style was the same thing as well. It was like, we're going to stop Najee and make Mac beat us and make their outside weapons beat us. And no offense to Ohio State, they just can't hang with the athletes that Alabama has. And it was very evident throughout from the first drive that they were not going to be able to hang with the athletes that Alabama had. And then just showed last night, Nick Saban has once again shown how he is the greatest coach ever. He made slight adjustments here and there, and Ryan Day did not make any adjustments, it seemed like, throughout the entire game. I didn't really watch much of the fourth quarter because it was really – there was not any doubt at that point, but – anytime you can scheme Devontae Smith on a linebacker several times and there's no adjustments made, really there's something wrong there. There should have been some adjustment made to that, and there just wasn't. And I was just dumbfounded. If I was an Ohio State fan, I'd be more mad at the coaches than anything else watching that game.
I've got a few thoughts, not really a lot about the game itself, just about the outcome. So first thing is with that title, that's – what, his sixth at Alabama, seventh overall, correct?
Correct.
All right, so I did the math on that today. That means if you have been a part of a recruiting class at the University of Alabama on the football team, you have at least one national championship ring if you were recruited from 2006 to present day. That is absolutely bananas. Like, we're talking, what is that, 14, 15 classes of recruits that if they stayed and played for their full eligibility have at least one national championship ring. I mean, that means that Saban and his staff can legitimately go on the road at this point and essentially say, if you come to the University of Alabama to play for the Tide, I guarantee you'll win a national championship before you graduate. I mean,
if nothing else,
that's bananas. Like, I think it just speaks to the standard of excellence that they have set there. And I mean, excellence there is the expectation. And I think we've talked about this a ton over the last year, that is A, what we believe Kirby is building in Athens, number one. And number two, man, I really think they're close. Like, I think that some of the gripes the fan base has had recently, I mean, it's still, you get a lot of the chicken littles in the fan base that are griping about the things they've always griped about. But the gripes have gotten bigger. Like we talked about last episode, the expectation is for us to play in the SEC championship game. Like, that's just the baseline. Yeah. And I think that's a bigger shift than we probably give credit for. And I just think recruiting wise, that they're not far off from that excellence. Now, I'm not sitting here trying to say they're going to win 6 national titles in the next 14 to 15 years, but I'm just saying they are closer to that standard than they've ever been, in my opinion, for a continued sustained level of excellence. So that was the first thing, man. I just, to me, the ability to say that to kids when you go sit in the living room, I mean, it literally had my brain in a pretzel today. I just couldn't. That's incredible. I think O.J. Howard tweeted something after the game last night saying something like, if you come to Alabama, you will win a national championship. And when I saw the tweet, I was like, I mean, he's right. You know, like, that's not just like pumping the tires on your own school. Like, that's just a fact.
Yeah.
So that's just bananas. I think that's worth pointing out. Other thing I wanted to point out was, and this has nothing to do with the game, but I mean, can we discuss Devontae Smith's outfit last night? I mean, just drip. I mean, drip everywhere. Like, the mask was on fire. The suit was on fire. Like, I know he has burned Georgia in so many ways, and, like, I should load Devontae Smith, but I love that kid.
I don't. Like,
I love him. Like, and if you, if you can't like that kid, then you're just a hater. I mean, that kid is everything that is good and right about college football. And like, I'm so happy for him. So happy he won the Heisman. He seems to be the ideal for everything to root for in college football. And like, I don't know, man, I just was so fired up for him. And dude, to wear that outfit and then to go out and just light it up last night. Like, I mean, to your point, yeah. I get what you're saying about the scheme thing. And I'm really glad you brought that up, because watching it last night, I just kept thinking to myself, thank God Texas hired Steve Sarkisian. Because, like, dude.
Yep.
He did a phenomenal job this year. And I know he's been getting some love, and obviously he's getting love professionally because he's got the head job at Texas. But, like, I still feel like the job he did this year was a little bit undersold. I mean, that offense was phenomenal, and it wasn't just a talent thing. He did a fantastic job all season long of out-scheming everybody. I mean, you saw it in their game against us. You saw it in their game against Florida. You saw it in the game last night. He put his players in a position to win on every single play. And, I mean, from the perspective of one of your coordinators, what more can you ask for? Like, I don't know. I thought he was excellent, and I don't think that should be discounted. So, hey, happy trails, Sark.
Yeah.
Hope you have a great time in Austin.
Yeah. Good riddance.
Also, some of the snippets have been floating around Twitter of him talking about offense at a Nike coaches clinic from 2019. And within that kind of Twitter thread is the full hour-long video of him. And, I mean, if you just love football, go watch that. That's just one of my favorite things, is to sit there and listen to those guys break down the game. And, homie, he just goes, this is what we're going to do against cover 3. This is what we're going to do against cover 2. This is what we're going to do against man. And it's kind of like a peek behind the curtain, right? You're kind of like you're talking to Oz a little bit. And I don't know. I enjoyed it. No different from the chalk talk that we referenced many, many episodes ago of Kirby and Coach Schumann. So I love that kind of content, regardless of who the coaches are. Just, I mean, they are as good at what they do as anybody. That's why they are where they are. So I think it's great content. The other thing I wanted to talk about was, there was a little montage of the Gatorade bath from every one of Saban's titles from LSU to present day. And I probably watched it like 7 times just because it's laugh out loud funny to me. Because for like the first 5, he just looks so pissed off every time it happens. And my favorite one, and it never stops being my favorite one, and I remember consciously having this thought when it happened in real time. But you remember the one where they beat Texas? I think it was their first title. And it was the Colt McCoy team.
Yeah.
Cole gets hurt early. And the Gatorade dump, he's wearing that white pullover and it's the red Gatorade. But like the two dudes that came to Gatorade bathing, like just low key clobber him with the Gatorade bucket.
Yep.
And he just looks so irritated about it. And for when I first watched it, I was like, oh, he's so irritated because he just got hammered with that Gatorade bucket. But as the years have progressed and I've continually watched that clip and like, I just think you've learned more about who he is. I really think what he's actually pissed off about is that they didn't do an excellent job of being Gatorade dumpers.
They botched it.
Yeah, like I think he probably replayed the tape for them and said, all right, boys, next year, this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna elevate the bucket and dump so there's no contact. All right. Like we're gonna be excellent at this the next time we do it. I mean, legit, I think that's what happened. Tell me that didn't happen.
No, I can see that happening. I can so see that happening.
So it makes me laugh every time I watch it. And I hope now every time you see that, that's what goes through your brain.
I definitely will. I want to go watch it right now, actually. Oh my God. That's great. So yeah, that's spectacular.
I told you I didn't watch the whole game. I watched till half, but, for me, it was expected. I just didn't think Ohio State matched up real well with them. And, I don't know, man, I think, and I say this just as a college football observer, I think all teams that played a full boat should get a ton of credit, right? Because yes, of all the things they had to deal with. And as we look back on, let's kind of pivot to Georgia's 2020 season, I think that's one thing this Georgia team should get a lot of credit for. And I mean, let's just shout this out from the rooftops. I mean, dude, standing ovation for Ron Corson and his staff, man. Like,
yep.
They did an excellent, excellent job, and they should be just applauded for that at every turn. Putting those student athletes in a position to chase their dreams and play the game they love and do it in as safe a way as possible. So I just really want that to be mentioned, and I really want them to be recognized for that. And, you know, we said this a couple times on our shows, but Georgia is one of the only teams in the SEC, and Alabama was too, who had no cancellations strictly because of things happening internally in their program. And I think that says a lot about all the kids in those programs for following the protocols and being disciplined and doing what their staffs were telling them. And I know we just kind of brush that off and go, oh, yeah, great job. But like, there were adversity and more circumstances, I think, than any other college football team in history. And I don't know if that's even really debatable. I mean, given everything they had to deal with all the testing and the not knowing what, if they're actually going to play their game the week they're preparing for it, and to go 13-0 and do it in the fashion that they did it. I don't know, man. They got a pretty good argument. I mean, because they were real, real good.
I think this is probably it's really hard. I really want to talk about this again in like 6 months because the season just ended and it's recency bias, you know. And I remember when we first started the podcast, like LSU was the best team we ever saw. That LSU team was the best team we ever saw at the end of last season.
Hold on. I'm glad you brought that up because this is my question to you. First thing I thought this morning, who you got, 2019 LSU versus 2020 Alabama? Because I would love to see that game.
This morning, 2020 Alabama. And the reason being
and see, is, I don't know.
My reasoning is that over the course of this year, Alabama's defense has gotten better and has shown me something, even though they got torched by Florida just three games ago. I mean, they showed me they got better. LSU's defense throughout the year was always just kind of meh. Georgia in the SEC championship game, you know, we are a Georgia podcast, so I'm going to talk about that. If Jake could have hit the broadside of a bulldozer that game, that would have been a game. The first two drives we had wide receivers running wide open for long touchdowns, and he underthrew both of them.
Yep. Well, and if Dom was healthy the full game.
That's true, too. But, I mean, he had D-Rob open huge down the middle of the field on a third down and, like, 15 play on the first drive. He had George open down the sideline. That was both on the first drive, and he underthrew both of them. Then he had one, I can't remember who it was, on the right side that he threw out of bounds on the second drive. Those are all three of those plays are touchdowns. He hits those two. That's an entirely different game.
Yeah, so the interesting thing for me about that 2019 LSU team was – outside of the game against Alabama, they didn't really match wits with an offense that was even close to as explosive as they were. And so I think that would be an interesting proposition because to your point, I think everybody and their mom would have said last year that that defense was unproven. So if you had a team that could really stretch them out and said, okay, y'all got to go toe for toe with us and score for score, I think it would have made things interesting. And I think that Alabama team with Tua last year showed you score some points on them, right? So
yeah,
I think that that piece of it with those two teams would be super interesting, especially, and this is a big asterisk, if Jalen Waddle was healthy.
Yeah.
Because I think you go their three across versus LSU's three across, and I think back-to-back – with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Najee Harris, I think that's pretty much a wash, right? Both guys can carry the football. Both guys can catch it out of the backfield. I think the one interesting piece is I think Mac's going to distribute it just as well as Joe Burrow did in those offenses. I think the one
Burrow
interesting
can
one
run.
Is, yep, I think his elusiveness would cause some issues. And
well,
so
the one difference, there's another difference you're not taking into consideration. His elusiveness would cause some issues, but Alabama's offensive line is far and away better than LSU's offensive line was last year.
Yeah.
Like night and day.
It's not
even close.
I agree.
There's five legitimate NFL players on that offensive line for Alabama. I maybe one on the LSU line from last year.
Yeah, that's fair. But I mean, I guess.
Burrow's elusiveness could make up for that, but. Yeah.
This exercise proved what was in my brain, though. And my thought was, it'd be a hell of a football game. So.
Oh, no, it would. It would.
I to your point, I agree with you. I think, you know, obviously we got to give it a little breathing room. But I just think this team.
That's what I said. Let's talk about this in like three months.
I still think history will remember this 2020 Alabama team favorably just because of the weapons that they had. And, I mean, look, man, Devontae. He's going to go down historically as a really, really, really just high caliber college football player. Like when they start doing the top 100 football college football players in history, you know, when they celebrate whatever anniversary is next or yeah. top 150, or I don't know what we're at next, 175 maybe. He'll be on the list. Let's just put it that way. So, yeah. All right. So let's move into some player movement stuff, and let's first specifically address Georgia's roster. So since we last talked, Adam Anderson and Jamari Salyer both announced they're coming back. I think our expectation was that the both of them would come back. However, and this is a big however, news drops last night that Tyreek Stevenson is transferring, and I mean, by almost all accounts, is transferring back home and going to the U.
Well, his Facebook page already says.
Two questions on that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that was pretty obvious. And a couple things before we get into the minutia of it. Number one, phenomenal football player. Gave everything he could to University of Georgia, and thankful for him. And for me, my lasting memory of Tyreek the Freak, and I'll always be happy about it, is that play he made against Cincinnati. I mean, just
yep.
What a play, right? I mean, that is the reason that they won the Peach Bowl. I mean, I know other things happened, but absent that play, it's not even a conversation. So I'll always remember that. And boy, was that an otherworldly play. The other thing is, you know, I think given the circumstance of the year, I'm just giving kids a whole lot more grace when it comes to transferring, especially when it's a situation where they're wanting to be closer to home, given everything that's happened in this past year. So just wanted to put those two things up front and then ask you these questions. Number one, how surprised were you? And number two, what do you think was the main impetus for that move?
There were rumors floating around a couple weeks ago that he was going to, that actually there were rumors floating around months ago that he was going to transfer, like during the season, that he was going to put his name in the portal during the season. I think I want to say it was after Florida, and then they were squashed. And then there were rumors several weeks ago before the Peach Bowl that he was going to transfer. And then they were like, oh, these are just rumors. There's no founding for it. So I was like, all right, you know, we're good. He's going to stay. He's going to be the leader of the secondary next year. So when it came out that he was transferring, I mean, it was like, it literally was bang, bang. Rumors started swirling at like 4:30. He was in the portal. So it was like really quick again that they came back.
Well, and hold on. And then hold on. And then at like 6:30, the highlight video was on IG with thank you notes.
Yeah. No, it was ridiculous. Like, I mean, it was all so, I mean,
it was quick.
So clearly this is something that I think that he had kind of like made his mind up a while ago and just decided to play out the year. It was a little bit of shock when you called me and told me, because I hadn't seen it yet. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, okay, the writing was kind of on the wall for this one. And honestly, it has to be to go closer to home. Like, I mean, it has to be. And there's no reason you're going to leave a situation where you're going to be the clear-cut number one corner to go to a situation on an SEC playoff contender to go to an ACC where you're playing for second best, because let's face it, no one's beating Clemson next year unless he feels that Georgia's just playing for second best in the ACC and he'd just rather be for home, rather go home. Now, I've also heard that this statement from people, which I take this with a grain of salt with kids, but there's also, you know, he'd rather be a big fish in a small pond. So the talent level in Florida, you know, it's basically him and that freshman, James Williams. There's nobody else there, like as far as talent wise. So it's like he would stand out more against, you know, as far as scouts' eyes. So, I mean, I guess there's something to that. Whereas opposed to Georgia, he's going to be around more talented players. I don't know how much there is to that, but, you know, it's the rumor mill, you know, so take it for what it's worth.
Well, look, obviously all the listeners weren't privy to our phone conversation last night, but I think you heard the surprise in my voice when I called you. I mean, I about fell off the chair when I saw it. I did not expect it at all. I thought he was going to be the guy on the boundary next year. It had not entered my brain space that he was on the way out. So I was shocked. And you know, to your point, just like environmentally talking about some of the things, like I'm with you. For me, the only thing that makes proper sense is that he just wanted to be closer to family, because I just feel like from a future perspective, setting himself up, kind of have his bag year type thing. Like, dude, you're coming off what's possibly 2 out of 3 years where they put a cornerback in the first round in the NFL. Like, I mean, dude, I think if Stokes has a good combine, he's got a fringe shot at that. And DeAndre was what, 2 years ago. And so there's a lot of pedigree there, right? So, I mean, the ultimate goal for these kids is to play in the league and to be drafted as high as possible. And to your point, what better way to set yourself up for that than to play high-level football in the SEC? So, man, I was surprised. And I think the necessary follow-up question to that is, that leaves an, I think, admittedly already thin defensive backfield. I mean, homie, we just got real thin on at the corner position from an experience perspective. Now, I'm not saying there's not a ton of depth there, because there is, but I'm just talking about snaps played and guys that have been in the fire. So for me, that has now become the number one storyline as we go into their 2021 season is how does that secondary look against a big passing attack? And look, you and I have talked about this off air a ton. I think the good thing for them is outside of the season opener against Clemson, and at this point, we don't even really know what they're going to be on the edge yet, what their offensive attack is going to look like. Who are they facing on that schedule that's going to be high-flying and flinging it around the yard, a la 2020 Bama or 2020 Florida or 2019 LSU? Nobody, right?
I mean, so, there could be somebody that pops up, but right now, nobody.
Right now, nobody. Yeah, exactly. So that's a good thing because I feel like it gives them a little bit of an opportunity to get their footing and figure out, you know, who they're going to be and get themselves situated. So that hopefully will be a blessing. And we'll just have to see. I mean, this is the point where the recruiting has to show up, right? Where the guys you brought in have to show up and you say, look, talent's going to play. And to the point we discussed earlier about excellence being the standard, I don't see all this hand wringing at Alabama when all this stuff happens. I mean, guys are going to the league there every year. Guys are leaving or whatever. Man, they just reload. And that's what we have to become to be there, right? And so I think this is an opportunity to do that. I think with anything, if you could even consider this adversity, but you got to take it and turn it into an opportunity. Take the adversity, turn it into an opportunity. I think that's what that has to be for these guys that are next man up. So who do we got left? We got decisions that we're still waiting to hear from Zeus on, right?
He's really the only one left for a decision.
Yeah, he's really it, right? Everybody else has made their choice.
Everyone else has made their choice. And the last day to declare, I think, is the 18th or 19th.
Yeah, man, I don't know. You know, if I was advising him, I'd tell him to go. I wouldn't say it's a, you know, big-time depth year for running backs in the draft. And he had a good enough year, I think. I mean, the numbers look just fine. And
I think the concern with him is that one year could really propel him up, but then one year he's basically weighing the one year could really propel him up the board, but he could also get hurt again. So, and there's only much tread on running back's legs.
I think for me, man, his decision point is real similar to what Elijah's was 2 years ago. I think he's really got to evaluate what that backfield looks like coming back. And is he going to get 2/3 of the carries like he did this year? Because I will say this, and I don't really have a great empirical argument for it because the numbers are the numbers. It's just an eyeball thing. Did he do anything to justify that? I mean, I just think when you objectively just eyeball test, look at the other guys that played. I don't know, man. Like, I would give Kenny more run. I would absolutely give Kendall Milton more run. I mean, I think another year in the program, another year in the weight room, dude, Kendall Milton could come out and have a monster year next year. Monster.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And then, homie, we're not even talking about James Cook. So I don't know, man. I think you got to start looking at a numbers thing and where the touch is going to be. And yeah, I don't know. I think if I was in that advisement group, I'd tell him, I think you got to take a shot and go. Because I think we talked about this off air, but he'll make a roster. I mean, he's...
Well, he'll make a roster because he plays special teams. That was the difference between him. That's the difference between him and Elijah. Elijah didn't play special teams, and that's why Elijah's bounced around practice squads.
Yeah.
But Zeus plays special teams. I mean, Zeus had a blocked punt this year. So, and everybody thought it was Tyson. Like, I remember people, like, you know, talking about it on Twitter, but it was actually Zeus. So, I mean, he plays special teams, and he will make a roster because he plays special teams.
Yeah.
So, and I don't see that. I don't see him bouncing around practice squads, but I see him making like an active roster because of that.
I will say, man, the longer that it's gone on, the more I've been like, he must be wrestling with this. Like, I thought he was a for sure he's going to declare.
So did I. So did
and I thought it would happen real quick. And so as it's progressed, it kind of reminds me of, and it's, I mean, this is a way different talent conversation, but I'm just talking about the actual decision itself. It reminds me of Roquan after 17, which for me, man, that one was like a no brainer. Like, if he didn't go, then I think he would have catapulted himself to
my number one favorite dog of all time, because he obviously loves the University of Georgia. And I still think he does. Like, I think that's why the decision took him so long. Also, man, you talk about your what ifs. Could you imagine that team with him back in 18?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that. That's a whole nother podcast, but, So, man, the Tyree thing was interesting. So my question to you, I'll ask you the same thing on air that I asked you on our phone call last night. What do you think this means for them in the transfer portal, or do you think it changes things from what they're trying to, the pieces they're trying to put in place between now and signing day?
Well, I think the biggest, I think they're really high on Nylon Green. I think they're really high on Nylon Green. I think that this will, I don't want Tyreek on the team, but I think this actually helps in the recruitment of Terrion Arnold. Because it opens up playing time right away. And people say that Arnold could come in and start right away. I'm not sure. I think Arnold's more safety, but he might fit in star. Which that's part of the thing with Stevenson too. I feel like Stevenson kind of played out of position. I think Stevenson's more built for safety, and we had him playing star mostly, but that's neither here nor there. So I'm getting off topic. In the transfer portal, really, I don't want to waste the spots unless it's somebody that's going to come in to start. Why are we going to waste a spot? Because we have, like you said, we have depth. Yep. Why are we going to waste a spot on someone to come in to just take up depth from young guys that could get playing time behind our starter? If they're not going to come in to start, what's the point?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of my thought process. I did see someone, Christian Tutt, he just entered the portal today. So that's a possibility. He started all season. He's actually a 2-year starter, I think, at Auburn. So he entered the portal today. So, I mean, that's a possibility. I'm not sure. Like, he would, I mean, I think Ringo's got a spot locked down. So I think that's a no-brainer, unless he's, you know, gets hurt again, or there's an issue with, you know, he just hasn't developed at all. I think Ringo's a starter. No questions asked.
Nylon Green early enroll.
Yes. Yes. Yes, he did.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, I think between Nylon Green and Keely Ringo, that is the size profile that Kirby envisions having at the two corner positions, right? And I mean, look, they'd be super young, right? And no game experience. But the flip side of that is it's just youth. And I think the way kids play today, I think certain kids are more apt to play early just because they're playing more football than they played, like, even when you and I played in high school, you know? Like, it's just, it's a year-round enterprise. And so the amount of reps they're getting is just different. And I think the size and the speed is always the differentiator. But from everything we've read and heard, those two guys are candidates to kind of buck that trend and play early. So,
and I mean, Brenny looked great in the Peach Bowl. So
looked,
I mean,
great. But I think to your point, I think Brenny is built more for the star.
He would be a star. He would not be. Yeah. He would not be a outside guy.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and dude,
safety's a lock. In my opinion.
I don't want to just toss him to the side because he's been there a while and he's a big kid too. Plus he has an excellent name, and so I really want him to play. But Amir Speed, I mean, dude, he's a long player. Like, I think he fits that profile body type wise of what Kirby wants at the corner position. And he played against Cincy, so we'll just have to see. I mean, they're going to have to figure a lot out there. But I guess the good point
is old man. Huh? There's an old man of that group you're forgetting too. William Poole is still there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And he has been there a long time. Yeah. Well, and he'll get a look. I mean,
he's a star. He plays the star. Like, I mean, I feel like we've got a lot of people that play the star and we don't have a lot of people that play the outside. That's the problem. I feel like we've got a lot of people that play safety and star and not a lot of people that play outside. But I mean, I don't really know, like, other than Green, like, I don't know where Kamari Lassiter is going to fit in, the other freshman that early enrolled. I don't know if he's outside or if he's safety. Like, I don't know where he fits in this group. So if he fits on the outside, like, I don't know where our depth is behind behind, really. I know Nylon Green's an outside guy, but I don't know. Like, I don't know if they're going to do sides. I don't know what the plan is with this. But I mean, this is that's Kirby Smart's baby. Like, the secondary is his baby. Finger all over the secondary. And let's be here. So I really, really wish that Tyson would have decided to come back another year. He's got all the measurables in the world, but I feel like he just never put it quite all together. I feel like if he would have come back, you know, to have that 1 year where everything kind of clicked for him. But I feel like this year with all the youth, that it's just, you know, there's going to be some growing pains, but there could be, you know, this could be with all this development by, you know, week four, week five, week six, we're going to see all that in-game experience really pay off.
Yeah, I'm with you. Look, Kirby and DBs, I'm never going to be too super worried about that. I think he's going to put guys in a good position and coach everybody up. So I'm not super worried about that. It's going to be an interesting storyline now. For me, that becomes the storyline as we lead into hopefully G-Day. I hope we actually get a G-Day this year and then into the 2021 season. So I want to touch briefly on this. We'll probably close with this, but reports have been stewing over the last couple weeks that with all this stuff going on at Tennessee, that Jeremy Pruitt is probably out. And I found particular humor today in hearing Feinbaum have to talk about it and saying that he's hearing that Pruitt will be out. And I just think it's should be a requisite that he should be compulsory that he goes on his national air and makes a formal apology to Aaron Murray, who was, as it turns out, absolutely right about everything.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Feinbaum is just a blowhard. And I mean, who didn't see this coming? I mean, let's be honest. Pruitt is not built to be, as Murray said, a CEO. He's a good coordinator, but he's a good coordinator for a few years because he rubs people the wrong way.
Yep.
He just, that's just who he is. That's his personality. And that's just how his career is going to go. He's going to be a 2 to 3 year stopgap wherever he goes because he's going to have to move on because he just rubs people the wrong way.
I just imagine Aaron Murray today, like Kermit, sipping the tea. Just like, yep. Nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. But we had chatted a little bit about this off air, but I mean, who takes that job? Like, and oh, how the mighty have fallen. Like, what a disintegration of a program over a 20-year period. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I feel like every guy they hire is, oh, he's going to turn around at Tennessee. Oh, he's going to turn around at Tennessee. And, I mean, it has just been one dumpster fire after another.
Really, the worst thing they ever did was fire Fulmer. I mean, it's not like when Fulmer was hired, yes, he had an average year and then a bad year. So like the trajectory was down, but it wasn't like he had strung like, you know, three terrible years together in a row. Like, I mean, Pruitt has had bad year, decent year, bad year, and they're getting rid of him. And let's be realistic, like all this talk about these sanctions that are coming down, all the rumor and all the scuttlebutt on that is that this is all Tennessee fueling this to try to get out of the buyout.
Yeah.
Like there's not really a whole lot of like smoke to it. Like there is some smoke to it, but it's all stuff that would normally be self-reported. But Tennessee is like higher ups are trying to make it bigger because they don't want to pay the buyout, which I think is around $13 million.
Yeah.
Because they don't, I mean, not that they don't have the money, but they, you know, the boosters don't want to fork that money over and then have to fork over whatever money they are because they think they're Tennessee and they think they're going to get a big name coach. But I mean, who's out there? Who's going to want that job? Well, first of all,
well, look, I
who's
mean,
out there?
Yeah. I guess I phrased that question wrong. Who of any quality or value is going to want that job? I mean, look, there's plenty of people that are going to want the job because it's an SEC head job, right? But I guess my question is, like, who would want to walk into that? You know, like, The roster. It's not like you're walking into a roster where you can go, oh yeah, I could see this or I could see that, or we got this guy. Like, dude, that they are bereft of talent at the quarterback position, which is, I mean, that's the starting point. And then like they just don't have dudes. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I just
Pruitt was their seventh or eighth choice.
Yeah.
Remember, Pruitt was their seventh or eighth choice. So yeah. Let's be realistic. They got turned down several times the first go around. No one wants to work with Fulmer because Fulmer has his hand in the cookie jar. No one wants to work for him. That's the problem right there. Until Fulmer's gone, they're never going to get a high profile guy to come in there that's going to want to quote unquote turn the program around, because Fulmer just has his hand too much in everything. That's the problem. And I'm not saying that, you know, he's the only problem, but he's the main problem. And until he leaves, you know, Tennessee can continue to burn and be this dumpster fire that it is, and I'm going to continue to enjoy it.
All right, last question, and then we'll take a reprieve until next time. But if you were a betting man and were placing odds on where Dan Mullen coaches in 2021, is it in Gainesville? Would you take Gainesville or would you take the field?
Gainesville. This is all a ploy to get him a new more money. This is the best team that he's had in his career that finished 8-4 on a 3-game losing streak. Yeah. This is all a ploy to get him a new contract. This is the equivalent of when Gus got that 7-year $49 million deal after the 17 season, when he went off of beating us and Bama on back-to-back weeks and make it to the SEC title. This is the same thing. This is all that is.
Yeah, I think they will be – it's going to be all offseason, right? All we're going to hear about from Florida fans is how great they're going to be and they're going to win the East again and blah, 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 blah. But, homie, they are losing a ton. And, like, I think it showed in the games that they're – well, let's not say there. In the games that Kyle Pitts didn't play, they were, shall we say, average. And, I mean, even if you look at our game, after he went out, their offense was pretty average. And that was against our skeleton squad defense. So, like, I don't know, man. And they're not going to have Trask, who I think is the perfect conductor for that offense with what Mullen wanted to do this year. And so, man, they're just losing a ton of production. And what is that stat that Seth Emerson always cites about you can directly correlate percentage of returning receiving yards with offensive success? And what are they losing? Like 85% of their returning receiving yards?
Something like that. It may not be quite that much, but it's over 80. I know that. It's ridiculous.
It's a lot. So,
yeah.
And they're losing, you know, the guy that threw it to all those guys. So, I don't know. I just think they're going to be in a tough spot. And lest we forget, that defense was horrendous. And
they still have the leader of that defense.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I don't anticipate Florida being any kind of, you know, big juggernaut next year. I just think in general, the East is going to be really, really bad this year. I mean, really, really bad. And, you know, our cross divisionals are what? Arkansas comes between the hedges and we play Auburn. And so, like, Auburn's got first year head coach. I don't know, man. That schedule does not seem daunting to me. So we'll see. I mean, look, a lot can change between now and then with a lot of injuries and stuff, but outside of Clemson, there just ain't much juice on that schedule. And boy, I am fired up though that's where they start. I love a big old blockbuster to start the season. Like, I just think it makes the wait a lot more palatable because you're actually got something to look forward to and you're not playing Samford to open the season.
Yeah, I know. That's so true. And I do, since we're getting ready to close, I hate to reference something that I read because and not remembering where I read it from because I hate not giving credit. But if the season is not, the schedule does not get changed, and we open with Clemson like we're supposed to, really the Clemson little mini dynasty that they had really started with a win over the Dogs.
Yeah.
In Death Valley. Let's return the favor this year. That's just, I can't remember who said that. Like I said, I hate that, but let's return the favor this year. We got a long off season, but that's what I'm looking forward to.
That can function as a gigantic catapult, not just from the win, right? Because it's not just about the win. It's about the narrative. And game day is going to be there. They're going to be on a national stage with a national platform once again for the brand to show who they are and what they are. And if they can come out and get a win on that stage, it really, I think, elevates them from a narrative perspective for the rest of the year. And I think really gets that train running downhill for 2021. So yeah, man, it's going to be interesting and a lot of excitement. And I mean, it stinks we got to wait, but at least we got a lot of stuff to be excited about as we wait. And yeah, man, that's all I got for today. So as we always say, go Dogs, sick 'em.
Go Dogs.
Hey, George is better now.